In Colossians chapter 4 and verse 2, continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. Meanwhile, praying also for us, that God would open to us a door for the word to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in chains, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each other. It's so good to see everyone that's able to be out this morning. Again, we have many we need to be praying for the work. And we're so thankful that, Kathy, that you're able to be out with us. And we pray that you will continue to improve. So today I want to do some lessons on communicating. This morning we're going to talk about talking. This evening we're going to talk about listening. A couple slides to get us warmed up here. Here's man daydreaming during his wife's long story, praying it doesn't end with a question. I don't know if some of you may know somebody that has experienced this. My wife just turned to me and said, I was talking to you and you yawned 6 times. Am I boring you? I said, those were not yawns. Those were 6 unsuccessful attempts to speak. So we need to understand a little bit about communication. And as we've talked before in other lessons, with communications, there's 2 parts. There's the transmitting and the receiving. We can talk at people, but it doesn't do any good to talk at them unless they receive it. So we need to learn how to talk so that people will receive the message, and we need to be able to listen, as we'll learn this evening, to know how that message should be received. So Jesus called believers to be the salt of the earth, Matthew 5:13. Salt is an important mineral. It preserves food, brings out flavor, soothes, and heals, and it is necessary for life. It balances fluids in the blood and is vital for nerve and muscle function. So it's been a while, but I have gotten rid of that white salt that you buy at the store and gone to sea salt. Sea salt has so many minerals in it. It's rich in minerals. If you're taking mineral supplements, and this isn't a advertisement on supplements, but sea salt has what you need. The only thing it doesn't have is iodine, but it is very good for you. Salt is an important mineral, very important. Preserves food, brings out flavor, soothes and heals. It can be used for so many different things. So salt, that is the word that Paul used regarding our speech. Gracious in speech. The goal is to bring out the best in others in a conversation, not put them down and not cut them out. So it's not, again, when we talk, not so much about what I've got to say, but about getting the message across to you. And I've mentioned this before, when I am talking to people on the phone or going into a store or having to meet somebody and talk with people, I keep in the back of my mind, I want to make sure I am the nicest person that they talk to for the day. Even if I'm upset, I try not to yell and scream at them. I want to be the nicest person. Because if I yell and scream at them, and then they say, so what do you do? And I say, oh, I'm a preacher of the gospel. They're going to say, huh, something's not right here. So our words should impact our conversations for better as we bring a different flavor to our interactions, build others up, and share as well as defend the gospel. The salt of the earth metaphor applies to the way believers talk as well as how they live. The content and tone of our words should impact those around us for the better. The right amount of salt and food brings out flavor and transforms a meal. You know, you can say the same sentence in different tones and get a different response from people. We need to be mindful of that. What is grace? It's an objectively, it's that which bestows or occasions pleasure, delight, or causes favorable regard. It is applied to beauty, gracefulness of a person. That person is very graceful. We talk about it with speech, words of grace. Let your speech always be with grace. So always, always, absolutely, at all times, under all circumstances, have kind and gracious words. Not evil, vicious conversation that gets people worked up. And it usually does more harm than good. And who is it that controls our speech? We get into an argument with somebody and say, I can't believe they said that or did that. And we can escalate an argument by the tone that we use. We can de-escalate a conversation by the tone that we use. Seasoned with salt. Again, there may be reference to the preservative and purifying power of salt. Let our speech be wholesome, not corruptive. As food is seasoned with salt and made pleasant and palatable, so let our speech, especially to those that are outside. And have you ever sat down, and I think, my opinion, summertime is some of the best time to eat because of all the fresh food and the cookouts and everything. And a lot of times you go someplace and they have a nice big table spread and they put down the food. And one of the first things I'll reach for is the salt shaker. I will use it then, but the salt to flavor the food. It just does something special. So let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Paul wished that the Corinthians knew how to answer the false teachers, as well as things that may come up. So our conversation has to be seasoned with salt, something that is appropriate to the person, something that is appropriate to the occasion, something that is appropriate for unbelievers. But the rule holds true in all conversations. Speech with kindness, fitted to the hearers. These are the characteristics of a Christian speech. We speak right. We walk right. We watch for those things that are in the world. We have our thoughts, our words, and our actions all consistent. They are all consistent. How many times have you seen, or you can imagine this in your picture, someone singing a song, oh, how I love Jesus, oh, how I love Jesus, and then they'll throw the songbook down and yell at one of their children. Friends, there's not a consistency there. Our thoughts, our words, our actions, our speech is important. So let's consider a few passages that the Bible has to do with our speech. In Proverbs 12:18, the words of the reckless pierce like swords, but the tongues of the wise bring healing. So here we see in Proverbs 12:8 that words, they can cut like a sword. They can just slice somebody open. We might not mean them to, but our words can do that. And when you think about this, the words of the reckless pierce like swords. What comes to mind is these wounds and bleeding. But the tongue of the wise brings healing. That's a sweet thought. Have you ever had a rough day and you call up your friend or you go somewhere, you talk to your spouse, and you say, honey, can I talk to you about this? And then after that talk, you just feel so much better. The tongue of the wise brings healing. And that's what we need, is healing. Matthew 12:36. But I tell you that everyone will have to give an account on the day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken. Sometimes people just talk nonstop, constantly. Even if we don't talk that much, we've got to realize that we are going to give an account for every single word that we say. Some people will say something and they'll say, oh, it's nothing, it's not a big deal. Well, in Matthew, we are told that we're going to give an account for every empty word that they have spoken. Again, we can choose words to build people up or to tear them down. Which word box do we go to? 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. So I've got to ask myself, how much do I encourage people? And what's the easiest way to encourage someone is with our words. With our words. Perfect example here. I'll call somebody by name. She's not listening. Hannah. She does something and we say, oh, Hannah, that is so good. You did it. You did it. You encouraged somebody. Some point in life, we stop doing that. We need to keep doing that. Encourage people. Oh, it's so good to see you here. Oh, I'm so thankful you made that point in Bible class. I'm so glad you did this, you did that. We need to encourage one another. I know it was hard for you to get out today, but I'm glad you made the effort to get here. You are an encouragement to us. You are an encouragement to us. If Kathy made it out after everything that she's gone through, she's an encouragement. We need to encourage her. Everybody is watching, but we can't be an encouragement if we aren't here. And if we want to encourage someone, we need to open this little thing right here and say, you are such an encouragement. Proverbs 16:24. Gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Again, this is a very beautiful verse. What is sweeter than honey and the honeycomb? Gracious words. Words full of grace. What is it sweet to? It's sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Again, honey is used in medicinal purposes in a lot of places. And our words should be used as medicine to make someone healthy, to help build them up, to make them strong. So I have to ask myself, are my words sweet and healing? And it doesn't take a lot of words to build somebody up or to cut them down. You don't have to sit down and get lectured at. You can say something. Again, sometimes you see a parent talk to a child and that child just melts from what the parents told them, the tone they told them in. And other times you can just tell somebody, thank you, I love you, I appreciate that. And it builds it up, builds them up. Ephesians 4:29. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for the building up of others according to their needs. Again, it's interesting in these verses, it talks about all or any. Our words are so important. We are not to let any at all unwholesome talk come out of our mouths, but only what is helpful. One of the things that has helped me in the last year or so, I would say, be less worrisome and anxious, is I've cut out so much of what I've watched and listened to and leave the TV off, leave the radio off more and more, because so many people have things turned on 24/7 and they are constantly bombarded with all of this information. And how can you have a mind, a heart that is at peace to think and reflect? And when you don't hear that stuff, you aren't thinking about it all day. And you can think about other things. You can think about positive things. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths. You turn on the TV, you turn on the radio, and it's going to be just about all unwholesome talk. But we need to focus on only what is helpful, helpful for building others up according to their needs. So again, do I build people up with my words, or do I tear people down? And if we tear somebody down, if I tear somebody down, I've got a responsibility to build them back up. And how am I going to do that? It's going to start with my words. Hebrews 3:13, but encourage one another daily, as long as it is called a day, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. How often do we encourage one another? I say it, I don't do it enough. And as a group, how often do we encourage one another? We can do better at doing that more and more daily. There are times, especially in life, when things might be troublesome. We need to be mindful of that, especially a husband and wife, but not just limited to that. In a congregation, a sickness going on, we need to encourage Code. He's not here. We all know he wants to be here. And when he is sitting with Jane, that wears him out. We need to encourage him, to let him know how much we appreciate him as a person and all that he has done and is doing right now. How can you think of a better example of a godly husband and wife than someone that's been married 70 years? And Jim and Joyce, I can say that about you in a couple of years. But they are such an example. Encourage one another, as long as it's called today. Someday, people aren't going to be around. How are we going to encourage them then? Have you ever said, boy, I wish I had told so-and-so this. I wish I had told so-and-so that, but they're gone. And we don't have a chance to say anything to them again. James 1:19 and 20. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. So James commands each of those that he wrote to be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Now, slow to speak does not mean slow to speak. It means just wait a minute before you reply. Just hold your tongue a minute. Wait before you speak. Think before you speak. And be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. What is wrath? That's that violent emotion. It's anger, indignation. How do people come up with wrath? It's usually by words that somebody told them. And that excites that anger. There is so much power in our words. And we recognize that again with a baby like Hannah. The words that we say are going to form in her mind, but they form in all of our minds. Men will not properly listen to God when they have bitterness, malice, and hatred in their hearts toward others. So if I'm trying to tell somebody that's lost what they need to do, and I come across sour and angry and upset about the world, are they going to listen to me? No. It's been observed that James in this passage gives us the version of the principle, speech is silver, silence is golden. sometimes it's best not to say anything. There is a philosopher someone asked him one time about his profound silence, and someone asked him why he was silent, and he said, "Because I have sometimes had occasion to regret what I have spoken, but never that I was silent." So how many times have you said something to somebody and you wish, boy, I could take that back, but you can't take it back because you spoke too quickly, too rashly. And again, I've used the example before in a conversation. It needs to be balanced. And sometimes people they can't wait. They aren't hearing what the other person is saying because they know what they're going to say to that person. Friends, we're teaching somebody, we're teaching the lost. We've got to be patient and hear what they have to say to know how to respond. And I've used the illustration before, the conversation and a tide. The tide comes in, the tide goes out. It's natural, it's normal. The tide comes in, the tide goes out. This person speaks, that person speaks. This person speaks, that person speaks. You've got that. And what's the other? It's like one of those two slides at the beginning. It's like a tsunami. The waves come in and drown out this person, and this person can't say anything because they don't even have a chance. Well, let's look now at Proverbs 10:19. In the multitudes of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. Sometimes, sometimes the more we talk, the more trouble we get ourselves into. The more we talk, the more we sin. Proverbs 13:3, he who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction. I think that one's pretty self-explanatory. Proverbs 29:20, do you see a man hasty in words? There is more hope for a fool than for him. That one's pretty direct. So this is one of the reasons the Holy Spirit tells us and explains why we are to be swift to hear and slow to speak, slow to wrath. Those who are full of wrath or violent, mentally agitated, are such that they will not be in the proper frame to talk to someone so that person that is listening will receive the truth. And that's why we've all heard of people talking about someone else, just the way they tried to teach this person the truth, and it was like somebody shouting with a loudspeaker. What is the righteousness of God? A simple definition is therefore right doing. To be righteous, one must do right. 1 John 3:7, he that doeth righteousness is righteous, even as he is righteous. If I want to be a righteous person, it's real simple. I just do right. I do the right thing. It's not talking about putting on a long robe and dressing up and walking around and with a holier-than-thou attitude. It's just doing the right thing. It's clear that righteousness is that state or condition wherein one is approved of God, but God approves of those who only do right in keeping his commandments. Which commandments? All of his commandments. We don't get to pick and choose. So to possess the approval of God and the righteousness which he requires, one must do right by keeping his commandments. Now let's look at James chapter 3, and we're going to look at verses 2 through 12. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in the horse's mouth that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships, although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no one can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father. With it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. For out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter water at the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. So James says a lot in these verses about our tongue, about our heart, about our life. And he gives us six different word pictures. And the Bible is full of word pictures, but they help us to understand and visualize. So he talks about a horse's mouth and bits. We've all seen a horse with the bits in its mouth, and you can put a small child on top of that horse, and that child can direct the horse because of the bits in its mouth. And a rudder on a ship, you can see a very large ship. It just takes a small rudder to direct that ship. A fire and a poisonous snake. Again, we've seen fires, devastating fires. The fire starts small. Somebody doesn't put out a campfire. Somebody throws a cigarette out a window. Something happens, and you can have hundreds and thousands of acres destroyed from a very small thing. You see the connection between the tongue, how it is, and a poisonous snake. Again, a little snake that can bite us, and with that bite, it can kill us. It can make us so different. And again, that's our words. And we're talking about being a Christian. A fountain of water. Can you go to a drinking fountain and you put your cup there and you get fresh water one day and salt water the next day? You say there's something wrong with that. And a fig tree. He talks about a fig tree. What do these pictures, these word pictures mean? Well, a horse's mouth and bits and a ship and a rudder, these show the power of direction. Our words can direct people in different ways, in good ways and bad ways. Our words can lift people up. Our words can tear people down. He's talking about the power of direction. A fire and a poisonous snake. This shows the power of destruction. This tongue, this little tongue, this little member of our body can do so much destruction. He talks about a fountain of water and a fig tree. And this shows the power of life. That water and food that we need, our words again can build people up, can make them stronger, can encourage them, can edify one another. We sing these songs, these beautiful songs, the words of these songs. There's something, I don't know if it's me, but I can read something in the Bible, and I know it's in there, but then I'll hear a song, and I think of that song, and I can repeat that song all day long. And maybe that's why God wants us to sing, because that connects a different part of our brain. And if I'm feeling down, I can think of songs and just sing them in my head all day long. the power of life. Proverbs 15 verses 1 and 2, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. Friends, we need to be mindful of the power of our tongue in teaching others, in the relationships that we have with one another, and in teaching our children. John 6:68, but Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. Friends, when it comes to listening, when it comes to speaking and listening, we need to hear the words that Jesus spoke to us. We need to have an open heart. We need to have a heart that's submissive, that whatever he tells us to do, whatever he speaks and wants us to do, we need to do it. Friends, if there's anyone here this morning that needs prayers, needs to make confession, needs to respond to the gospel invitation, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.